18th day of December 1991, Howard Braun and Flo Joseph are with Bill Stark at his residence on Fifth Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA for the National Council of Jewish Women.
Part-time employment of older Americans.
No, start again. What did you say?
Where do you want to start?
Now.
Do you have an agenda? Have you items?
No, I have not. Just now.
You mean you have? Don't you have a list of things?
Yes, I do.
Oh, let me start talking to you today. I'm reading a piece of paper here, having to do with the employment of older Americans. When I retired in 1970,
you had to talk about it.
When I retired in 1972, at the age of 55, I decided that one of the unmet needs of the community was the fact that no one was looking for or interested in jobs for older people. A, that had economic needs, B, that had psychological needs, that is to get out of the house when you retire and not have to bother a spouse beyond possible survival, or you needed the money just to make ends meet. So that I started an organization called the Senior Citizens Services Corporation. And I was lucky enough, with the help of a few other people, we had a staff of a director and maybe two secretaries, of finding 700 jobs for people over 65 within 2 years for no fee. We ended up being subsidized by the Allegheny County Area Agency on Aging. We created in our second year $300,000 in taxable payroll. December the 1st of that year, we were assured that we would be funded to carry on in the following year, and December the 15th, the Dirty Dogs said, "You're out of business," and destroyed my organization.
Who were you in with?
I was going through every agency. You mean as to who else helped me do this?
Yeah.
Nobody. It was my own idea, and I carried it out. I had one employee by the name of Paris, who since died. I always suspected of AIDS. But he had hired a couple secretaries. We went into the Eureka building. We paid rent, and we developed quite a an effective program. By the classic story about the little Jewish man who lost his job along around 60 or 61, and we found a job for him up in the North Hills. He lived in Squirrel Hill. He took the bus downtown, got off at Horns, got on a North Hills bus, got out as far as the bus went, which was somewhere around Northway Mall, and then we had the employer come down and pick him up. And he worked his 6 hours and turned around and reversed the process. It was such a heartwarming experience because this man was just so desperate, and this experience gave him an opportunity to feel like a human being. There were so many other examples that was just thrilling. It was the tragedy of the times that the reasons the IRA aging gave for cutting us off are still not clear to me. And it took the county area agency on aging some 12 years before they got around to putting a job component into their program. They can only think in terms of throwing money in the form of food or some thing that everybody else was doing. And it struck me that, having been in business, we had as many as 400 employees. I could tell you that most people couldn't give you more than 4 hours of continuous productive service. Then lunch came in the afternoon. You might have gotten a half an hour, and the rest of the day was wasted. So I developed the theory in my own mind for years that the ideal thing would be to put two people on a job, working 4 hours each maximum, taking advantage of the huge experiences of a lot of older people, and creating two taxpayers, creating two healthy, happy human beings who didn't have the resources that, for instance, I had to retire and have music and art and poetry and community service as constructive alternatives to doing nothing in retirement. The idea was so clear-cut that it was just heartbreaking to see the social workers come along one more time and destroy a good idea.
That's right. I agree with that. I'm sure you were coming through.
You said the social workers in the agency?
Are you sure it wasn't the politician?
They couldn't. I didn't even bother going over their head to the county commissioners.
Uh-huh.
Because I had said to the commissioners in face-to-face meetings that this was a service I was so excited about. Describing
who are you talking to? Flaherty and Forrester?
Jim Flaherty at that
time. Mm-hmm.
Forrester. Here's a letter in the same period of time, dedicated to 1976, December the 26th, to Dr. F. Ray Marshall, Director of the Office of Human Services at the University of Texas. When you become Secretary of Labor, I would like to volunteer for 2 years to implement my ideas on providing part-time employment for older Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I close a copy of the letter to the National Suggestion Box that spells out the utter simplicity of this project. It would be my idea to put this service into the United States Department of Labor office in every major city in America where you have one, and just give me a desk that says Older Citizens Employment, and let me in that particular community train someone to go out and put together part-time jobs for people over 65 who need this work for support, financial or support psychological. And then as I created the job and made them into taxpayers and put the bodies together, I would then take these successful cases across the floor of your office and put them into the hands of the system and let you execute this part-time concept. Needless to say, this was intended for the Carter administration, designed to sponsor greater citizens' participation at the volunteer level. I would want to get increased tax income from this program. Social Security and local wage taxes would be impacted, and this program should produce more than it would cost. Needless to say, I never got an answer. I don't know.
Surprised you didn't get an answer.
No, I am too, but it didn't happen that
way.
It was exciting. For instance, when I went to the hardware store, yes, you ask how people reacted. If you look today, this is now 25 years later, 74 to 91, this is
almost 20
25 years later.
Years later. Uh-huh.
This is exactly the pattern that's being executed by female lawyers who have babies that want to work at home. The two of them taking a job, and I can tell you that Reed Smith Shaw McClay and Smith Buchanan Ingersoll and all of the major law firms have taken this concept and implemented it as a full-time venture. It didn't only have to work for older people, but my concept was that no one was out there giving a damn about the older worker. And if you think about the number of people that you see, street people today, and you see the number of people that are starving, representing the fact of no one having taken an interest in it. And my concept was to set up a program inside the U.S. Department of Labor, because the employment services are all here, they're all over the country, and getting them interested in a sidebar deal. I didn't want to get into the mainstream and have them say, oh, we can't afford that. I was offering this as a volunteer service, offering to set it up in every major city in America, because it was so simple.
The criticism I've heard of part-time, 5 to 15 people in one job is that it's very expensive. What do you think of that?
The fact is that in the case of the older person with whom I was especially interested, because of their age, there was no Social Security involved. In most of the jobs that I set up, people were over 65. They were already on Social Security, and their part-time employment was a supplement. In those days, of course, you could only earn as much as a few thousand dollars a year. It's now up to $9,000. 1991, so that you had a chance to supplement your Social Security. But the most important thing was that you got your dignity back. This is the story of my life. If I could just help another human being attain dignity and not have to be totally dependent on another person or a system, this to me is the quintessence of what I want to stand for. No, the concept of there was no Social Security and there was no workman's compensation because these were part-time employees that didn't fulfill the strictures of the law at that time. The cost being doubled is not true. The cost might be 1.25 to 1.5 times more, but the productivity is at least 3 or 4 to 1. You've got a shorter time expanse in which to work. You give full power to that, and the productivity of the two people is not an arithmetric, it's a geometric progression. And this is so difficult for the non-professional to understand. Anyhow, it was an exciting experience, an exciting time, and I have to tell you, we did some good, even though they frustrated me in not being able to carry the thing to some higher level of business.
I gotta ask you. Why did Montefiore Hospital ultimately fail? Now tell me, you were
on the board of directors from 1955 to 1972, and the ultimate failure of the Montefiore Hospital was an absolute unwillingness to accept the importance of modern marketing techniques by Mr. Goldberg. The tragedy was that the presidents that he dealt with over the 20 years that I was involved were astute business people, successful, knowledgeable about marketing, and yet could not for some reason, I think it was the fact that the executive vice president, Mr. Goldberg, didn't really think that he needed leadership to the extent of telling him how to run his business. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any other reason. A very nice man, always friendly to me, very kind. Mm-hmm. But the point was, I said to him back in 1978, 1982, I said, Irv, you've got to put with all the thousands of people in the apartments up and down Fifth Avenue and in your catchment area, you've got to put some kind of a device into those apartments that give emergency medical reference to Montefiore in your catchment area and give these people the knowledge that they can immediately get a response and incidentally force the issue of getting these people to come to Montefiore for their medical needs. I believe that his statistics showed that he had a domination of the Jewish market, and yet when the University of Pittsburgh and Montefiore Hospital merged, then the 30 or so doctors went over to Shadyside, a large portion of his population went with those doctors, and Shadyside attained a dominance in the Jewish community as to Squirrel Hill and Oakland and the immediate surrounding areas that proved to be the linchpin of Shadyside's incredible success. Mm-hmm. And eventually caused the withering away of Montefiore's market and its eventual demise. The number of doctors that left who would normally be expected to fill the beds made the difference.
I understand that the population seemed to like Shadyside's nursing far better.
That was another factor, too, because if you remember, as long as we became affiliated with the University of Pittsburgh, we also had to close down the nursing school. And I had the misfortune of making the motion at the nursing committee to close down our nursing education program. Mrs. Perrin at the time was the chairman of our committee, vice president of Montefiore, president of Ladies Hospital Aid at the time. And we debated long and hard, but the ultimate pressure coming from Goldberg and the people that were going to...
Why did they have to close it? I don't understand.
Because the concept at the time was that nursing education was no longer required to run a hospital, that these nurses, I shouldn't say required, but they felt that the nursing bachelor's degree at the University of Pittsburgh was more prestigious and more meaningful long run to the execution of their programs than having girls come out of 3 years of an in-house nursing program and do human experiences. At the time that we closed the school down, the university brought in for a major change in their nursing degree program. Dr. Enid Goldberg, and the great thrust at that time was to get the Bachelor of Science in Nursing at the university. They were going to create all this great leadership cadre that was going to upgrade the nursing profession. And that, incidentally, was where the other pressure was coming from, that the Pennsylvania Society of Nurses was saying, no more are we going to do bedpans and all these other things. We're going to prescribe the various types of medicines and carry out the doctor's orders on a much more highly professional basis. Blah, blah, blah. And I use that. You know, I'm not at a loss for words, but I'm using blah, blah, blah to indicate the total stupidity of the whole concept. It was heartbreaking to sit there and have to put that nursing school out of existence.
Yeah.
It was preeminent. But the whole function was to try to get into the University of Pittsburgh Medical School component and make this into a teaching hospital with all of the attendant features. The tragedy at the time was that when the kids came to elect where they wanted to take their residencies, of the graduating class of the University of Pittsburgh, let's assume that 35% of that class wanted to stay in Pittsburgh, 90% named Montefiore as their first choice for their internship, and we were walloping the hell out of Presbyterian. And this was a great annoyance to the dean of the medical school to see this pipsqueak of Montefiore outstripping his huge educational component at the medical school. Now, this tendency of kids to want to stay at Montefiore first lasted almost to the end of the hospital. First of all, the number of doctors in our medical staff at Montefiore that were interested in teaching and anxious to teach and willing to teach was a phenomenon that most other hospitals didn't have. It was almost, excuse me, a carry through of the Jewish tradition of education being so important. It was thrilling to see.
So the failure was in not having clientele.
The failure was in the loss of market. Mm-hmm. You remember that even when Shadyside built the nursing home facility on Hobart Street in Squirrel Hill, can you imagine Shadyside building a nursing home in the middle of Squirrel Hill that Montefiore should have done years before?
Yeah.
We put a store at the corner of Forbes and Murray to pass out literature on diet and a bunch of other things. That's great. Forbes and Murray was great, but it wasn't where the people were. The people were smack down in the Dan Cornbeef belt of Phillips Avenue and Hobart Street and Douglas. Those were the people that needed medical attention. More than that, though, when they built the nursing home, it was done in such a beautiful scale that they were attracting people from all over the county. One of my oldest friends, a very successful, whose family founded, was one of the founders of Mount Lebanon, opted to spend his last days on Hobart Street. because Shadyside had such a remarkable facility, and he was born and raised in Mount Lebanon, where the Methodists had a magnificent home on Bower Hill Road, 2 blocks from St. Clair Hospital.
You're referring to the place on...
Bower Hill Road.
I'm thinking...
You're talking about the Shadyside Hospital is called...
Where the school was.
Where the school was. Yeah, on Hobart Street, where we used to see the circus before you came to the... The circus.
Replaced David School.
That was exactly at the Davis School site. Incidentally, the circus played there as late as 1935. None of those apartment buildings were there. I was the newspaper boy in that area.
The circus played where?
Right on Hobart and Phillips. Yeah,
before Ringling the school was built?
Oh, sure. Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey came to Pittsburgh, and they were on that piece of ground between Phillips and Hobart, between Whiteman Street and three-quarters of the way down towards Murray Avenue. It's a big, big lot. And as a matter of fact, they pulled out a telephone pole along around 1932, and they left the hole covered with a peach basket lid. And I'm walking out of school one day, and this lady puts her foot down there and sinks up to her hip. And I witnessed this and eventually ended up going to court as a witness for the woman getting some compensation from the insurance company.
I didn't know there was compensation in those days.
Well, you got paid as a witness.
No, not you. I mean for the...
For accidents? Oh, for accident. Sure.
Tort case?
It was a tort case involving a suit against the Bell Telephone Company and Duquesne Light, whoever pulled that plug out, and the owner of the property for not having properly covered the thing. And of course, I'm walking home from school and I witnessed this thing, and all I had to do was tell the truth. But I got into the court system at a very high level. It was an exciting experience for a 12, 13-year-old kid.
I can't remember. Did you say you mentioned 12, 13? Were you bar mitzvah?
Never.
Scotch?
No, I wasn't bar mitzvah. My parents did not believe in organized religion, and so I was bypassed for that. But incidentally, all four of my grandchildren
were.
My two girls were confirmed because there wasn't bar mitzvah in those days. They were sholem. And my four grandchildren are all my grandson bar mitzvah and my granddaughters, one of them in Israel, a thrilling experience. And the youngest one down in Florida, who conducted the entire service for an hour and 45 minutes a year. It was a thrilling experience on videotape, and I just can't tell you how fabulous it was. That young lady is now going on to college. She took a karate black belt on a Saturday, and on Sunday she went to the Jewish Community Center in Boca Raton to teach karate to mental retardees. This kid is just an incredible person, making an A in trigonometry. All three of my granddaughters are experts in mathematics. They take one of the best 2.5 years of calculus in college, excused from college math because of her success at the high school level. And now this one is going to take analytical geometry, 4 years of math, and I could hardly pass algebra.
Hey, you know, we've been jumping around. You've reverted to family. Let me stay on family for a minute. You want to talk about your brother, Sidney?
I have a brother, Sidney, who was born 12 years after the last of us. And my mother had 3 9-month babies, miscarriages, lost to doctors. And then Sidney was born. It was like, and of course my parents couldn't afford domestic help, so my function was to wash diapers and to make beds and to clean the house. And I told you, I thought earlier, for 10 cents a week, I was overpaid.
How much older were you?
I would have been 12 or so.
12 years.
Maybe 13. And then he eventually started to take piano lessons, and I would try to help him, and he would infuriate me, and I would use physical force, which I sincerely regret, and he had never forgotten. And
Why'd you beat up on him?
Because I wanted him to make the piano sound right. He was practicing scales, and he was making mistakes.
Well,
so I would think that the older brother want to get the guy to play better rather than to beat him.
Yeah.
And I just feel sorry about it because he never forgot it and he never forgave me. But he ended up being a remarkable amateur pianist. I am so proud of him. I had nothing to do with it except to set an example, I suppose, and to encourage him. And he lived in a different world. We were three children separated by 19 months. My older sister and my younger brother and I. All three born within 19 months. And then Sidney came along 12 years later. And so we had the opportunity to help raise him, to his regret. But he lived in a different world because by the time he was being raised, my parents had attained a certain economic abundance. And so he was able to go to Columbia to go to college for a master's degree, and he always had the appurtenances of the middle class Jewish youngster in Squirrel Hill, none of which we had had at his age.
Mm-hmm.
And we were often married, and so he had my mother to himself, and she had him to herself, and they were fast friends. And Sunita, a wonderful young man, who eventually took my mother to Israel with his very understanding wife, Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived a different experience than we did. It was much more relaxed in a lot of respects. It had greater opportunities.
Did he live in Israel?
No.
She took. They took her to Israel. It was a miracle because she had no interest in going. It was a great, great experience, and she was well into it. She might have been in her 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother was a country girl all of her life. One day we were trying to persuade her that she should buy, because by this time she had attained significant affluence, that she should buy a 100-acre piece of ground up in the Westmoreland County to make a campsite for the YMHA. And it's a cute story. The three brothers took her up to Westmoreland County, and we walked the place, and she had to urinate, and she just went out in the woods and relieved herself, which was so typical of my mother. No muss, no fuss, no bother. She was born on a farm and raised on a farm and probably never lost the essentials of human existence. You know? And she was.
Did she buy the property? Or?
Well, at that time, we offered this property to the joint meeting of the Jewish Community Center. By that time, was organized. And we offered them the property with no strings attached. And John Wolf, the chairman of the camp committee, and he said the property, he went up to see, said the property was totally unsatisfactory. And then within a year, turned around and bought it with Kaufman funds. For some reason, he was not interested in the Stark name being attached to that. And he wanted to preserve, I thought, the opportunity for the Kaufman name to be carried through on the Irene Kaufman settlement in the Irene Kaufman camp. And if we were to if we were to get that property for the community just for the privilege of putting a name on it, that would bother him, I thought. So incidentally, then they subsequently came across the property down in West Virginia which they bought from Harry Kalson, and they sold the piece that John had arranged to buy that he thought was not satisfactory for us to buy.
John who?
John Wolfe.
Oh, yeah.
He was a grandson of Leonard Kaufman. He was on their national board of directors, and he was past president of the Irene Kaufman Settlement. And I played golf with him and played bridge with him, and I often wondered if he knew what I'm telling you,
yeah.
and whether it meant a damn thing to him. And I'm sure it didn't. Sidney went to Columbia, read his master's thesis on Herman Melville, and was so effective in writing in English and in music, and had such a wonderful time in New York that I tried to persuade him not to come back to come into our business, because I thought that it was a waste of his natural talents. And I promised him that as a company that I would be delighted to share with him as an equal partner in our family's business. He did not listen to me and came back to Pittsburgh, and then proceeded to do an excellent job. He went down to West Virginia and developed a significant business for us in Clarksburg and Fairmont and Morgantown, and developed a lot of friends for us, and then came back to Pittsburgh and did equally well.